This is Pure Decking, show number 580 for Thursday, October the 3rd, 1950. This is a show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and honestly, at this point, I'm just here to watch the dumpsters burn. Tonight, we have an Are You? What is up, Are You?
I just got back onto the internet. It's been a week, I tell you that.
You took a digital detox. I'm taking a booze break this week. So
actually, not really. It just had cables running everywhere in the office here and dragged out all the old retro stuff and set it up on a different monitor. So I was still around on the net, but I just wasn't able to really do much. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm on a fucking 16-year-old laptop. Doesn't even know what to do with the internet at some points. It got me through the week. That with a PlayStation 3 and an unmolested copy of Grand Theft Auto 5 and vanilla Minecraft. A bit different. I mean, it was great. You know, I woke up the Sunday, and then Monday when everything was open, all hell broke loose in the Middle East, and I was unable to get on the internet and actually look at it. Fucked. Yeah, you know, like the happenings were happening, and I wasn't available. I'm like, fuck.
They're kicking off World War III without me.
Yeah, that old laptop, man, she does not play well with TeamSpeak.
Yeah.
So it just wasn't even worth the effort to try and rig everything up. And most of the ports on that thing aren't modern. So yeah, it just wasn't worth it.
No, I gotcha. I got a few machines kicking around like that.
Yeah, I mean, it got me on the chan. That's about all I needed in the news websites. So that, and I could watch my streaming.
Well, there's always breaking out the old Commodore 64 if you really want to go for that.
By Thursday, I was getting real fucking itchy. I was looking at breaking out the Mega Drive collection.
Well, actually, it's kind of funny because I've been looking at a couple of Commodore projects, and I've realized the machines I'm going to use for these projects are as old as Commodore systems were when these things came out. Because I'm going to hack up a couple of those old DTVs.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, they're the joystick game that plays 30-some-odd Commodore games, but they've got a full C64 in an ASIC chip, basically. So it's effectively... Well, it's not real hardware, but it's really close. It's the equivalent of a mister. But, you know, it's buried in an epoxy blob, but they've got a bunch of the breakouts on the boards on these things labeled, and I always intended to go back and hack one up, and I just never got around to it, and I happened to see a couple of them for super cheap on eBay the other day, and I'm like, well, sure, why not? So I picked a bunch of them up, including a Hummer game, which... If anybody who hasn't looked into hacking one of these things has no idea what I'm talking about, but Radio Shack made another plug-in TV game using the same chip. So it's effectively a Commodore 64. It was just as a packaged in game for some Hummer thing. And if you open it up, all the labeled pinouts are still there. This thing may have been new in box. Well, it might've been in box. It didn't look new. The packaging did not look like it had, aged well. All the stickers were falling off of it. It was pretty rough looking, but it was like still taped. Like it still looked like the factory tape and the factory twist ties holding it all together and all that. So either somebody immediately put it back in the box, like after using it for a day, or it never got opened. It was just old stock sitting on a shelf somewhere.
That's the way I found my Mega CD. It was in box, still had all the instructions, everything. The plastic was still wrapped around it. So I don't know whether somebody... It was definitely been opened, but I don't know if it had ever been used.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, I hooked the thing up to make sure it worked. Yeah, and it worked as well as I'm sure it ever did, which is probably why if it did get used, it got back right back up and put in the box. But I don't care about that. I'm going to reflash the damn thing. But it was just really funny because it was like, I think this might have been new and this might have been, you know, unopened. But the moment I opened it, the packaging just kind of deteriorated and it just fell apart.
Had its day.
Yeah.
It's I didn't miss modern gaming this week at all. I really didn't. And it's proved to me another reason why I fucking may not even bother signing back into Steam. I mean.
Well, you know, it's as amusing as it is that you say that, you know, I've been going round and round with Fallout 4, trying to get it to run right.
Yeah.
I loaded it up on my Steam Deck, which is perfect. Like half the, not even half the power of my main laptop.
Plays better. Yeah. I think that game requires older hardware. It does not like modern.
Yeah. You would think being the newer engine, it would be a little bit more tolerant. Nope. Apparently large chunks of that game are FPS dependent. So if you throw more horsepower at it than it's expecting, well, I mean, you've played early DOS games before, you know, different CPU timings was a thing. Well, written before just, CPU timings were a thing might be a better way of saying that.
Some just don't play right. But I have that older hardware. It's just, I mean, emulators are great, but sometimes they just don't play like the original. I mean, I was shocked. I didn't even realize Grand Theft Auto 5 came out for PS3.
Yeah, you don't realize how old that game is.
Yeah, it fucking plays well. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
So, well, yeah, they got into this. A lot of games got into this weird updating and re-releasing rather than actually, you know, making new games.
Yeah, self-censoring, too, is the big thing.
Yeah.
I noticed that, like, from... This is what I remember of the PC version before I put it down because it just became a microtransaction fucking nightmare.
Yeah. Well, yeah, what was it called?
I mean, the graphics weren't that off like a PC version. I mean, one of the good things is you didn't get any of the frame rate losses on if you don't have like the latest and greatest graphics card with.
Well, yeah, because the console version. If especially for one that you haven't updated, it's locked to what it was, so it's going to run as well as it ever did.
I mean, yeah, it played really well, you know.
But yeah, that's a definite downside of the stuff that's always updating, is because you mentioned the self censorship. There was Ion Fury. That was the game. It was a newer game that they made in the build engine, and they had just updated it to support modern resolutions. So, you know, it was the same engine as Duke Nukem 3D. It just had been updated a bit. And it's a great game. But the first couple of updates, they were going in and censoring the jokes.
Yeah.
Because people were complaining.
Had fun killing prostitutes again.
Yeah. Like, but
that's part of that game.
That game, the moment it came out, they started having people losing their mind over it because, like, they were originally going to call it Ion Fury, and I guess somebody, or not Ion Fury, they were going to call it Ion Maiden, and I guess the band sued them. So,
yeah, I could see that. And what is it with those 80s metal bands being so litigious?
They got old enough that they think, oh shit, this is worth something now.
And they all got super litigious, especially in the fucking early 2000s.
Well, they all decided their stuff was worth something, and they wanted to protect it. It's easy to be a rebel when you got nothing to lose.
It is, yeah. I mean, you either sell out or you die young. Apparently, how that game's played.
Oh, what I'm trying to think what it's from. There's another quote that's real good. It's real easy to be an angel in paradise. That's from something, and I can't place it right now. But that came to mind. So. Anyways, let's do this TechSpot story. This is funny. It's not unexpected, but it's from TechSpot. Headline is AI coding assistants do not boost productivity or prevent burnout, study finds. So this is interesting for a couple of reasons, but
You're telling me all the money they threw at AI isn't paying off? Really? Holy shit.
Well, the whole idea of, well, we're going to fire half the workforce and give the other half AI to make up the difference. Yeah, that's not.
But they fired half the workforce before it was. That's what this article is, isn't it?
No, this is more basically lamb. This is more basically saying GitHub Copilot sucks.
Okay.
Developers were supposed to be among the biggest beneficiaries of generative AI hype, as special tools made churning out code faster and easier. And actually, okay, before I get any farther in the article, there is a general thing that's come about with programming, right? Programming in the early days, and I say early days, like I was actually there for the early days. Okay, my first machine was a Commodore 64. So that's what I think of when I think of the early days. I'm sure there's somebody out there who had a, you know, VAX system. It's like, that's not the fucking early days. That's an 8-bit micro. That's luxury. You didn't have to put the bits in by hand with switches on the front. So,
good to say, man. There's still people kicking around.
You didn't have to listen to the relays clicking. It's like, so, okay. So for my point of view, when I first got into this, programming was considered kind of a creative endeavor. Well, a lot of businesses tried to use more of a manufacturing line or assembly line mentality for setting up how they're going to track programming. You know, that's where waterfall versus agile and all this other stuff comes from, is the idea that just, you know, programmers butts in chairs typing will churn out so many lines of code and that will get you new things. But that's not really how it works. There is a degree of that kind of what would you call it? I don't want to say mindless, because it's not mindless. And even on actual factory lines, it's not mindless work, but it's very repetitive. Like the guy bolting, you know, two robotically assembled modules together on a car is not doing it because it requires some human intervention. For the most part, he's doing it because they haven't figured out how to make a robot that can do that yet. It's some specific motion that just doesn't translate well, or it's a tool that just doesn't work well, or it's something where you need somebody who can look at it and go, oh, that's not lined up, and fix it before they haven't figured out how to do it yet. But
it's not just that, Morbs, it's the speed.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Or the cost.
I mean, well, they're definitely going to have a machine that could do it over a human. But it's the flexibility of the movement of a human on a production line,
right?
Is why they're there.
But you get my point, though. But what they're doing is they're not making the guy on the assembly line is not designing the product as he builds it. He's following a schematic, and now he might be making creative decisions for how to get it to where it needs to be, because maybe it came from the previous station misaligned, or maybe it needs, you know, maybe there's something wrong with it, so a human eye can catch it and go, oh wait, set that one aside, something's wrong with it. Or, you know, like you said, there's a component there that it just doesn't make sense to put a machine there, because you need that kind of a flexible position, right? So you have this idea that, you know, people have this idea that coding is assembly line work, but it's not. Unless on your assembly line, the people running the assembly line are deciding, you know, designing the product as they build it, right?
Yeah.
So this design element is kind of missing in a lot of these modern architectures when it comes to programming. A lot of them really are designed around the idea of just churning out code. And I say that as somebody who works with a lot of developers, but I'm not a developer myself, so I kind of have that view of, I know enough about it to understand what's going on, but I don't do it every day kind of thing. So I'm not buried in it. So I can actually stick my head up and look around, as opposed to, I know a lot of these guys who, the way I was saying it on some other conversations, is they can't see past their own nose You know, if you try to have a conversation with them, everything has to relate to what they're doing. And if you start talking about something else and it's not related to what they're doing, they lose their mind because they're trying to apply whatever it is you're talking about to what they're doing. And a lot of these guys are like that. And they're so in, you know, in it that they can't put their head up and see what's really going on. And I think that's the problem, is that you have this idea that they can assemble it and design it at the same time. And really, it's either design work or assembly work. Because if it's both, then what you're talking about, somebody who's a craftsman, not a line worker. And they don't pay them like craftsmen, at least not most of the time. So, anyways, so back to the article here. Developers are supposed to be among the biggest beneficiaries of generative AI hype, as special tools made churning out code faster and easier. But according to a recent study from UpLevel, a firm that analyzes coding metrics, the productivity gains aren't materializing, at least not yet. The study tracked around 800 developers, comparing their output with and without GitHub's Copilot coding assistant over 3-month periods. Surprisingly, when measuring key metrics like pull requests, cycle time, and throughput, UpLevel found no meaningful improvements for those using Copilot. Matt Hoffman, a data analyst at UpLevel, explained to the publication CIO that their team initially thought that the developers would be able to write more code and the defect rate would actually go down because developers are using AI tools to help review code before submitting it. But their findings defied expectations. In fact, the study found that developers using Copilot introduced 41% more bugs into their code, according to CIO. UpLevel also saw no evidence that the AI assistant was helping prevent developer burnout. Revelations counterclaims from Copilot's makers at GitHub and other vocal AI coding tool proponents about massive productivity boosts. A GitHub-sponsored study earlier claimed developers wrote 55% faster with Copilot's aid. I'm going to stop here for just a minute. I'm also wondering about the skill level of the developers using the tools. Yeah. And when I say skill level, I mean familiarity with the language that they are using. I don't necessarily mean programming concepts or, you know, but I would imagine if you've got a bunch of junior guys who maybe it's their first Java project, or maybe, you know, maybe they're not real familiar with the language they're using because maybe they're moving to Rust from, you know, whatever it was previously, just to pick some common modern examples, right? If they're real junior and they don't know the common libraries, maybe they're not super up on the syntax or the best or some of the best idioms to use in that language. You know, like if you sat me down and said, write JavaScript code. I hate JavaScript. Yeah. I've never learned it. I hate it. Every time I've tried it, it pisses me off. So, because it's like, it looks like it wants to be C style coding, and it's not. It's just like, asshole. Anyways, but if I needed to do it, I could probably get it done fairly quick using something like an AI assistant to help me translate what I'm wanting to do into the code. And then I know enough about general coding that I could then go back and look at what it spat out and probably, oh, that's a problem, or, you know, fix what it generated and actually get some useful code out of it faster than if I had to sit there and, you know, look up, you know, what are they generally called? Like types and recipes and example codes in JavaScript to figure out how, you know, the old copy and pasting from Stack Overflow development method. I kind of wonder if a lot of these AI assistants are just automating the whole copying and pasting from Stack Overflow thing. But if you have somebody who's, you know, they've been writing Java for the past 20 years and they're working on their current Java code, they're probably going to put out much better and faster than anything that AI is going to develop. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I kind of wonder about that too. So back to the article. Developers could indeed be seeing positive results, given that a report from Copilot's early days showed nearly 30% of new code involved AI assistance, a number that has likely grown. However, another possibility behind the increased usage is coders developing a dependency and turning lazy. Out in the field, experience with AI coding assistance has been mixed. At custom software firm Ginsoft USA, CEO Ivan Gecht told CIO that they found the AI-generated code challenging to understand and debug, making it more efficient to simply rewrite it from scratch. A study from last year where ChatGPT got over half of the asked programming questions wrong seemed to back his observations, though the chatbot has improved considerably since then with multiple updates. Gecht added that software development is 90% brain function, understanding the requirements, designing the system, and considering limitations and restrictions, while converting all this info into code is the simpler part of the job. And he's absolutely correct. And when I skimmed this article earlier, I missed that line. So I did a lot of explanation for something that was already in the article. However, the cloud provider Innovative Solutions CTO Travis Rell reported stellar results with developer productivity increasing up to 3 times thanks to tools like Claude Dev and Copilot. The conflicting accounts highlight why we're probably still in the early days for AI coding assistants, but with the tools advancing rapidly, who knows where they are headed down the line. Also, you're comparing two different industries. You're comparing a bespoke software developer, someone who likely writes a lot of in-house business level logic level software that would be things like Java tools or web dashboards, interfacing between existing systems kind of stuff, because that's usually what a custom software house does. And then you're comparing it to a cloud provider they're going to be helping people design systems to go into AWS or Azure, a lot more modern stuff that's a lot more popular right now. A lot more of the in vogue thing when it comes to IT is all the cloud migration. So I would suggest that there's probably a good chance that the AIs are probably way better trained on AI on a cloud software and modern, like, you know, trendy programming languages than stuff that an in-house developer who's likely working in various versions of Java and other older, more traditional systems that the AI is probably not really as up on. At least that's my thought.
Yeah, not a programmer, never dabbled in it, so I don't really have any understanding of it. You imagine my shock that AI isn't the fix-all that they thought it would be.
Well, I actually, you know, everyone has seen the AI-generated art, right?
Yeah.
And some of it looks really fun or really cool. When I was, you know, hunting for articles earlier today for Decking, I kept coming across several posts about the AI generated images of Trump wading through the water are in fact fake. Yeah. Did anybody think they were real?
Shit, right?
I mean, anytime you look at, you can almost always tell an AI generated image because there's a little bit of uncanny valley going on and usually some details are slightly off.
Same with it. I also came across at least 6 AI generated pictures of depicting Israeli soldiers being dead. And you're like, dude, that's fucking AI.
Yeah.
You can see the hands aren't right. The shoe proportions aren't right.
It's like the old joke about being able to tell something was Photoshopped from having seen many shops in my days and some of the pixels. I mean,
and then there was a video from RT that was up on their website, and I'm like, I've seen this before, and it was from 2016, and it wasn't even Israelis; it was fucking Alabaster Shard's fucking troops, Syrian troops getting killed. They didn't even fact check it.
Well, my point was going to be that, you know, you can usually tell something is AI generated because something's usually a little off. Or he has that very generic look to it. It's like, oh, look, it's kind of like a Pixar. Or, oh, look, it's kind of like a photo. But something, you know, there's little bits that are off here and there. And you have the same, the background people are the same 3 people repeated over and over and over again doing the same thing the guy in the main ground is doing. Or the foreground is doing.
Exactly. It just doesn't sit right. Like, right. The AI art's nice, but it's not there for doing really good deepfakes yet.
I did see a video where somebody was using AI generated art specifically for making backgrounds for his video that were going to be out of focus, and it's like, that's this awesome use of it. But I was going to say AI generated code probably suffers from a lot of those same issues where everything it makes is going to be a bit on the generic side and a little off, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So using it as a shortcut to get some boilerplate code, you know, knocked out fairly quickly is probably a good idea, but you probably still ought to look at what it spat out and make sure you understand it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I wouldn't use AI to write a whole program. I would certainly use AI to generate chunks of functions so that you can then go back and tie the functionality together, especially if you're interfacing with libraries or APIs that you're not super familiar with, but you might want to still look at it and make sure that it's, you know, at least syntactically makes sense.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, maybe do some tests, make sure the code actually, you know, does what you want it to do. So
before it goes live.
Yeah.
That'd be great. You know, wouldn't want another oopsie doodles. Really break the entire internet again.
Yeah, really. Next article is from Ars Technica. Cox slows down internet speeds in entire neighborhoods to punish heavy users.
What?
Yep. This is what they're doing instead of upgrading their infrastructure.
That's fucked up, dude. That's a lawsuit.
It should be. Cox Communication is lowering internet upload speeds in entire neighborhoods to stop what it considers, quote, excessive usage, unquote, in a decision that punishes both heavy internet users and their neighborhoods. Cox, cable company with around 5.2 million broadband customers in the United States, has been sending notices to some heavy internet users, warning them to use less data and notifying them of network or neighborhood-wide speed decreases. In the case we were describing in the article, a gigabit customer who's paying an extra $50 a month for unlimited data was flagged by Cox because he was using 8 to 12 terabytes a month.
Damn.
Okay, that's a heavy user. He's paying the fee for unlimited data. If it's not unlimited, don't fucking advertise it as unlimited.
Yeah, like, I pay the extra for unlimited. Like,
if it's unlimited with an asterisk, that's not unlimited. So
mine definitely didn't have an asterisk because that was one of the things. Because I don't know if you guys remember back the early days of internet in Australia, it was capped at, like, you'd only have a gig or two a month. You know,
sure. I remember you juggling what game to download.
Yeah, like, it was fucking ridiculous. And now that they offer fucking cable, like fiber, and they said unlimited, fucking, I grabbed unlimited, man.
Oh yeah,
I never want to have to do that math again.
Cox responded by lowering upload speeds on the gigabit download plan from 35 megabits to 10 for the customer's whole neighborhood. Cox confirmed to Ars that it has imposed neighborhood-wide slowdowns in multiple neighborhoods in cases like this one, but didn't say how many excessive users are enough to trigger a speed decrease. Mike, a Cox customer from Gainesville, Florida, pays $150 a month, including $100 for a 1 gigabit download speed and 35 megabit upload speeds, and another $50 for unlimited data so that he can go over Cox's 1 terabyte data cap. Mike told Ars via email that most of his 8-plus terabytes monthly usage consists of scheduled device backups and data sharing via various encrypted information sharing protocols, such as peer-to-peer networks, gee, what a surprise, between 1 a.m. and 8 a.m. Ars agreed to publish Mike's first name only, but reviewed his bills and confirmed the basic details of his accounts with Cox. Yeah, he's, you know, running torrents or something along those lines. Whatever the current du jour is, maybe it's, you know, no, it's peer to peer. So he says encrypted information sharing networks. I mean, that could be a lot of things. It's probably torrents.
It's torrents.
Generally speaking, data usage for most households declined significantly during those 1 a.m. to 8 a.m. overnight hours, so a robustly built broadband network should be able to handle the traffic. In any case, Mike couldn't use more than 35 megabits for uploads at any given time because that's the limit Cox always imposed on his gigabit download cable plan. Mike said his household's daytime and evening use is more like a typical internet user's, with work-from-home activities during the day and streaming video in high definition during the evening. Mike also said that his level of internet use has been roughly the same for the past 4 years that he's been using Cox, but it was only in mid-May that the company flagged him for excessive use. This may suggest that Cox is struggling to handle pandemic-level broadband traffic, but Cox says the majority of its network is performing very well. Then why are you capping people?
Exactly.
Cox provided a little more detail after the story is published, saying that neighborhood-wide slowdowns and disconnection threats were sent to individual customers, or sent to individual customers, quote, are two separate initiatives that could cross over in some cases, unquote. Clarification. Mike's nightly uploads alone couldn't have accounted for more than half of his monthly 8 terabyte usage if his upload speeds were capped at 35 megabit. 7 hours of nightly upload at that rate would amount to 3.3 terabyte per month. The nightly uploads may have accounted for most of his upload usage tier, or upload usage. However, his monthly usage of 8 to 12 includes both downloads and uploads. Assuming Mike also was downloading heavily during those 1 to 8 a.m. hours, then the overnight usage included both downloads and uploads would account for most of his overall data usage. Yeah, they're torrents.
I mean, at least he's doing it between the fucking decent hours. He's not doing it from 9 a.m. to fucking 6 p.m.
Yeah. First, Mike got 3 calls from Cox, including one that left a voicemail saying, "We need to speak with you regarding your internet usage. Your home is using an extraordinary high amount of internet data and adjustments need to be made immediately." The voicemail warned that your internet will be scheduled for termination unless reductions are made within 5 days, according to Mike. Mike was explained how he responded. Quote, "Since I work from home, I naturally was very concerned that they would pull the plug on me and I'd be unable to work. Immediately calling the number provided in the voicemail, I was funneled directly to a department for questions about your recent internet speed changes and spoke with a representative there. He wanted to explain that their network is overburdened, and since I was an above average user, I was being targeted to lower my usage or else have my account terminated. I tried to explain that my usage is not out of the ordinary for me. My daytime bandwidth usage is paltry. Most of my bandwidth consumption is scheduled from 1 a.m. to 8 a.m. And that Cox should have been upgrading their infrastructure instead of oversubscribing nodes. And, oh, well, there's your problem. You tried to tell them how to do their job and pocketing record revenue. I was told if I did not make a substantial decrease in my uploaded data usage, my service would be terminated." Unquote. Comments on a Reddit thread last month confirmed that Mike isn't the only Cox customer being warned to cut upload speeds in order to avoid being kicked off the network. Cox didn't tell Mike exactly how much data he'd have to shave off his monthly usage. There was no magic number or threshold, just an arbitrary amount of decrease, a Cox deemed good effort, where his service would be cut off, he said. Just like, it's like, if it's lawyer. Okay, if it's not unlimited, give me the cap. What is the limit? And I will set it to hit the limit.
But I bought fucking uncapped. We're going to go to court over this.
Yeah, shortly after that phone call, Mike received an email from Cox. You remember the South Park episode with the cable company? We're sorry. Yeah. Yet again, South Park nails it.
Mm-hmm.
Mike received an email from Cox with the subject line, "Alert, action required to continue your internet service." Mike provided ours with a copy of the email. Quote, "We've recently tried getting in touch with you about your service. Your account has been identified as using an extremely high level of bandwidth, which is causing a negative impact on our network and other customers across your neighborhood," the email said. Mike's extraordinarily high upload usage is, quote, "negatively impacting internet service of our other customers, which is a violation of our acceptable use policy," the email said. The policy contains a broad prohibition on transmitting amounts of data large enough to disrupt the network, but it won't specify the amount. The real kicker is that
that's not good enough.
No, it's not. The real kicker is that Cox's email to Mike said that everyone in his neighborhood will get lower upload speeds until July 15th. Quote, "During these unprecedented times, many people are working and schooling from home, and maintaining connectivity is important. We're working to provide a positive internet experience for everyone, so we've adjusted our gigablast upload speeds in your neighborhood from 35 megabit to 10 megabit now through July 15th, 2020.
That's more than half.
Wait a minute. 2020. This article is 4 years old.
Damn.
It showed up in my feed today. Why am I?
I don't know, either way, it's still a good fucking story. I mean, it mightn't be current, but dude, they're pulling that shit. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, Cox email doesn't specify what Mike's internet usage spade that the usage decision, but it is apparently only happening in a small percentage of neighborhoods. Raises several
questions. I wonder if there was some more to this that came out and this was just tucked in with it, indeed.
Yeah, it could have been. This raises several questions we asked Cox. We asked the cable company why its network was unable to handle Mike's upload in the middle of the night and whether it had considered adding capacity to the network instead of forcing unlimited data customers to use less data. Asked Cox how much data specifically customers who pay for unlimited data are actually allowed to use, and why isn't Mike allowed to use unlimited data when he's paying for the highest speeds and extra for the unlimited data? Also asked why Cox is imposing slowdowns to an entire neighborhood instead of only the people who are allegedly violating the acceptable use policy. It's so they can get around their contracts. That's exactly why they're doing it. Cox didn't provide as much details as they're looking for, but confirmed the neighborhood-wide speed decreases, saying this has identified as a small number of neighborhoods and where performance can be improved for all customers in the neighborhood by temporarily increasing or maintaining download speeds or changing upload speeds to some of our tier services. Cox defended the temporary 10 megabit upload speeds for its gigabit download plan, saying that 10 megabit is plenty of speed for the vast majority of customers to continue their regular activity and have a positive experience. Of course, customers paying extra for Cox's faster plan and unlimited data are more likely to be outliers who actually need high upstream bandwidth. Unlike fiber to the home service, which ISPs offer symmetrical upload and download, cable service generally has much lower uploads and download. So, yeah. Coming soon, a price increase, which I'm sure they did. But, yeah, this was going on, and either I missed this back in the day, or I don't know. It showed up in my feed today, so I don't know why, but that's 4 years old, so I got taken by that, I guess. But shit, they were, I mean,
that's shitty.
You know, I do remember I wasn't on Cox. I was on Comcast for about a year, and I got a couple of notices for different things, and I was like, I'm not even doing that much. Holy crap. And, you know, I ignored them basically and just kept going.
Yeah.
You know, I had a couple of servers I was running, stuff for G15, things like that for our group. And I mean, it's like, oh, you know, the limit was this and you almost hit it. I'm like, yeah, fuck you. I don't care.
Yeah.
So I, you know, at one point I said, okay, well, how do I increase the limit? Oh, we don't offer increased limits. Your network sucks. Got it.
Yeah.
Now
they're not building their infrastructure out now, correctly.
And I guarantee they still haven't. Four years in, you know they haven't.
Oh, no doubt, dude. They wouldn't even looked at it. Not even a plan to update it.
So, yeah, I just
I don't know. With the quality of workmanship these days, I don't want them to fucking touch it, to be honest.
Well, it works. I just think it's funny. It's like, instead of, you know, upgrading your lines, getting better connectivity, people are obviously using it. You're paying for it. It's like, no. Look, you're going to pay us extra for unlimited, but you're going to keep using it like it's limited. It's like, then why pay for extra for it? Oh, no. We need you to do that. Then give me what I'm paying for. Well, you see... Seems like every company is like that anymore, though.
Yep.
Next article is from ghacks.net. PayPal's data sharing controversy. New setting raises privacy concerns. PayPal has reportedly made a change to its privacy policy that allows the company to share user data with third parties. There is a way to opt out of the data sharing. A report by 404 Media, which is behind a paywall, which is why we're doing a ghacks article instead, claims that PayPal has opted in users without their explicit permission to share their data with marketers. Why? Well, the company wants to offer a personalized shopping experience. The article shows a screenshot that is related to a setting captured personalized shopping. And it says, let us share products, offers, and rewards you might like with participating stores. So basically they have a setting to go turn off, you know, sharing your data, but it's defaulting to on. Gee, what a surprise.
Yeah.
So,
I shook. I fucking hate that.
Yep. The setting is described the follows. Quote, let us share products, offers, and rewards that you might like with participating stores. Unquote. Statement right below the toggle states that PayPal will start building more personalized experience for users starting in early summer 2025, and that users can opt in or out of sharing at any time. Also, there's a link that leads to a pop-up that says PayPal will share recommendations with participating stores based on your shopping history and preferences. Your info helps participating stores show you products, offers, and rewards that you might like. The problem here is that the setting was enabled already. That's not cool or even legal. You know that they did it to collect the data before they start rolling out the experience. PayPal isn't the first company to resort to privacy invasive marketing tactics, won't be the last. So, and they've updated their TOS to, yeah. If, you know, one of the really fun lines here is, looks like third from the bottom, or next to the bottom, second from the bottom. If you opt out, we will continue to disclose your personal information as necessary to complete transactions you initiate, but will not disclose personal information to partners and merchants. Yeah. It's like, okay, well, I mean, as necessary to complete transactions, but they will still, yeah. So, anyways, so if you log into PayPal data settings manage, you can go turn it off. But some users said they received an email from PayPal about changes to the privacy statement. And I think I got it too, and it just says that we've updated our privacy policy. It's one of the standard ones, so they obviously didn't want you to notice what it was about. So, well, just for fun, because I haven't looked at mine. PayPal. Let's just go log in and take a look. Log in. I do use a PayPal account, because I use eBay. Let's see here. That's how I get most of my weird retro stuff.
Fucking personal shopping, that pisses me off. I don't know about you, dude. I've got thing in mind when I go shopping. I know what I'm going to buy.
I usually do, too.
It's not going to sway me.
I usually do, too. It's just, I don't... What I don't like is that these companies are creating large sets of data. One of the stories I actually looked at for Decking Tonight and ended up not using was... 23andMe is not doing very well financially, and now people don't know what's going to happen with all that DNA data if they go bankrupt.
Somebody will buy it.
Yep.
Biolab firm. BlackRock subsidiary. Fucking Gates Foundation. One of them.
I'm finding that setting. Where's it supposed to be? Settings, data. Data and privacy. Yeah. Manage shared info. Where's... mine doesn't have that. Must not have hit my account yet.
The 23andMe... I don't know how they didn't figure out that the fucking... their business model wouldn't keep growing.
Oh, nope, there it is. And yes, it is... it is enabled by default.
Same.
Alright, well, it's off on mine. So... oh no, he buys old Commodore shit on eBay. How do we market to that? Shit.
Yeah, I don't even think they have algorithms for your shopping style, Morps.
Well, I know YouTube doesn't either, because YouTube, if I make a mistake and click on, you know, something, that's the recommendation goes nuts for that, because it's like, oh, something we can work with, as opposed to my usual eclectic mix of shit. So, yeah, it's very obvious the algorithms don't know what to do with me on some of these platforms, because, like, I accidentally clicked a video the other day. I was looking for 3D printing stuff. Oh, I remember what it was. I thought it was a video on somebody 3D printing Power Rangers helmets, and I was just kind of curious about that, so I click on it and watch about 2 minutes of it and turn it off. The next 3 days, my feed was nothing but Power Rangers videos. And it's like, I haven't watched Power Rangers since the 90s. What the fuck, man?
I was testing my sound system this morning. First thing, I just pulled up YouTube, and because it's a fresh install, everything's blank. There's no recommendations. So I just typed in the word car, and Disney Pixar Cars came up. I clicked on that video, and that's when I realized what I'd done.
Oh, no.
it's going to be a fucking mess when I go back to YouTube.
Don't recommend this channel. That's the other thing, is I have to, it constantly tries to feed me the fake science channels. You know, they usually have Elon Musk in the thumbnail and some crazy thing, and... you know, if they look half legitimate at first, and you go, oh, no, that's one of these. Don't recommend that channel to me. And then, you know, you get two more, and it's just the algorithm just doesn't know what to do with me.
So, yeah, it's just, that's how mine gets too, dude, because I do a lot of mechanical stuff, and I do a lot of news and, like, overseas broadcast stuff for her news.
Yep.
There's a couple of channels there that will rebroadcast Fox News nightly programs. And at the end, they've got like a 15-minute they're trying to sell something.
Yeah.
That gets me in all sorts of weird fucking areas, that one.
So, okay, next article is from Ars Technica. Last article we'll do tonight. I'm going to skip the U-Block. I'm going to skip my last article. It's a U-Block origin. Light is no longer going to be up to date on Firefox because they're having some beef with Mozilla, because I think Mozilla is trying to become an advertising company, unfortunately. So Firefox might have to start looking for a fork of that one if you want to keep using a browser that's not all about marketing.
Informed which browser I need to switch to next. Because if they get rid of uBlock, fuck that. I'm not surfing the internet.
I think Brave was going to be the next one to hop to. I know a lot of people like it. And that's my backup when something doesn't work in Firefox. I'll pop up Brave. And yes, I have uBlock installed in it as well. So, in fear of more user protests, Reddit announces controversial policy change. Moderators now need Reddit's permission to turn subreddits private or not safe for work. Following site-wide user protests last year that featured moderators turning thousands of subreddits private or not safe for work, Reddit announced that mods now need its permission to make those changes. Reddit's VP of community, going by go_JasonWaterfalls, made the announcement about what Reddit calls community types today. This was on the 30th. Reddit's permission is also required to make subreddits restricted or to go from not safe for work to safe for work. Reddit's employee claimed that requests will be responded to in under 24 hours. Bullshit. Reddit's employee said that temporarily going restricted is exempt from this requirement, adding that mods can continue to instantly restrict posts or comments for up to 7 days using temporary events. And if a subreddit has fewer than 5,000 members or is less than 30 days old, the request will be automatically approved. So only if your Reddit is big enough to matter do they suddenly step in and say, no. We actually control that, not you.
You're taking your content off our website. How dare you?
Yeah.
Fuck off.
Reddit's post includes a list of valid reasons that mods tend to change their subreddit's community type and provides alternative solutions. In other words, please stop breaking the website. We don't make enough money when that happens. last year, Reddit announced it would be charging a massive amount for access to its previously free API. This caused many popular third-party Reddit apps to close down. Reddit users then protested by turning subreddits private or read-only or showing only not-safe-for-work content or jokes and memes. Reddit then responded by removing some moderators, and eventually the protests subsided. Reddit, which previously admitted that another similar protest could hurt it financially, has maintained that moderators' actions during the protest broke its rules. How? Now that it has solidified a way to prevent something like last year's site-wide protest from happening again. Speaking to The Verge, Laura Nestler, who The Verge reported is go_JasonWaterfalls, claimed that Reddit has been talking about making this change since at least 2021. The protests, she said, were a wake-up call that moderators' ability to turn subreddit private, quote, could be used to harm Reddit at scale, unquote. The protests accelerated the policy change. So, yeah, a lot of the moderators are pissed. Basically, they're demoted. You know, they're saying, "Well, we're not even moderators; we're being demoted to janitors now." And it's not like any of them are paid. So that's the gag of it to me, is you've got some people building these communities on there. Now, you could argue about the value of some of these communities, but you've got people who are obviously putting in a lot of work to build up their community because they're trying to do it as a community space, not as a content farm for a marketing company, which is what Reddit wants to be. And when Reddit did something these communities didn't like, they tried to take their content off there and Reddit lost their fucking mind. You know, we did all the stories about moderators getting kicked and banned and new moderators being put in on some of the more popular subreddits, banning people for posting some of the memes that were, I mean, they were tame, but it was a meme. What were some of them? I forget some of them now.
The fucking time moves differently on the end.
Yeah. I don't remember what they were, but they weren't anything like, it wasn't like they were posting, I mean, some of them were posting just straight up porn or, you know, weirder shit, but some of them were just memes, you know, they were just goofy pictures over and over again. And, you know, of course it made the site unusable and broke a whole bunch of Google searches. So I'm sure it cost them a ton in ad revenue because I still use Reddit when I'm when I'm digging for stories, digging for stories. Yeah, we'll go with that. I know what I said, damn it. When I'm looking for stories for G15, I'll go to some of the subreddits because it's still more efficient than some of the other feeds, but I do have a few different sources I use, and Reddit is still one of them, but my usage of that website's way down because they just crippled it. And it's just like, there's nothing useful there anymore except for, you know, just getting new news links. That's about all I do with it anymore.
Yeah.
All the other subreddits I used to keep an eye on, with the exception of one, which is the CyberDeck subreddit, all the rest of them have just gone to crap. The Linux subreddit is trash. All the security subreddits are just trash. The couple of the other subreddits that I use for getting links are still useful, but even those are questionable in their utility. So I have a few other sources I use for gathering up links. Actually, Hacker News, you know, the news.y combinator, that's usually my first go-to when I'm looking for stories. Reddit's usually third or fourth on the list. Because I've got a couple of different feeds set up, and then I have a few sites I check directly, like Ars Technica, Torrent Freak, G-Hacks. Don't always use those guys, but, you know, I usually check them first. Anyways, we're at 10. We're at time. I know we started a hair late, so.
Oh, there you go. I wasn't even looking at the clock today because I'm not actually doing the sound monitoring.
But anyways, of course, listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Pure Decking every Thursday, Galaxy 15 Radio site, and the BBS. The website needs a flipping overhaul, and I mean, the BBS works great, but I'd like to update some of the menus at some point, so maybe set up some door stuff on it. Put a door to get to the IRC from the BBS, it might be worth doing that. In the IRC tonight, Al Hazard, myself, Sardonyx. Are you? Any closing thoughts?
Well, I just looked at my hard drives and went, fuck, I gotta buy a bigger hard drive for my operating system.
Yeah, Windows will do that.
I made a mistake. Need to buy another hard drive. It works for now.
Did you go to Windows 11 with the new machine?
Fuck no.
Okay, just checking.
I didn't build a whole new machine, dude. I just put a new hard drive in. Most of my stuff's too old to update.
Gotcha.
Like, it's got an update here for Windows now, and it's got the little warning: this machine does not qualify to run Windows 11. And I'm quite happy with that fucking warning being there.
Yeah, my laptop keeps trying to auto-update itself to Windows 11 when I'm not looking. So,
dude, mine doesn't even look like Windows 10 anyway. It looks like XP. Got a fucking shell over the top of it.
I don't blame you.
I'm telling you, dude, XP was the best fucking Windows ever. They fucked it all up after that.
I try to keep up with the modern Windows because I have to support people at work and family and other people who still use it. So I still need to at least be moderately familiar with it. So
no, I understand the necessity to know where you're going around the fucking thing. But dude, I'm not tech support. You know, that's when people ask me, oh, you know, computers, can you do something? I'm not your fucking tech support. You know what I mean? I am. Yeah. I won't even fix my parents' computer. Fuck that. Because if something goes wrong with it, they'll accuse me of hacking it or something.
I might have hung up on family members when they called me and you know, I say, is this a tech support call? And they say, yes, and I just hang up. That might have happened.
Yeah.
Multiple times.
I fixed it once and then got accused of something, so I didn't fucking do shit.
Yep. All right. Let's close this out.
Thank you for your continuing patience during this transitional... Zombie apocalypse.
Your satisfaction is very important to us.
I'm gonna be honest with you. I'm kind of retarded.
Man, I'm sorry about this. I hope this doesn't ruin your day.